This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Staff writer William Finnegan has been reporting on Latin American politics for decades, and Bill just recently returned from a trip to Venezuela. The economy in Venezuela is in a state of utter collapse. There's no other way to put it. Inflation has made the most basic necessities almost completely inaccessible, and people are waiting days for handouts from a failing government that seems unable to deal with the crisis at all. It's really the grimmest of situations. When Bill got back, he wanted to check in with an old friend, a Venezuelan living in New York, Francisco Nava.
So here we are in beautiful Hell's Kitchen, trying to find my friend Francisco Nava, a Venezuelan who's lived here a long time, but keeps close ties with family and friends back home. Lives with his mother, sings in a choir. His priest told him to do this interview.
Hey, Francisco, it's Bill. Thanks.
Hello.
Ciela. Mother, 90 years old.
Trabajamos para una revista.
Yo creo que si vamos a hablar de los problemas en Venezuela, tienen que pasar el año completo aquí.
She said that if all the problems in Venezuela, they will take more than a year to tell you about it. Sit down.
I met Francisco a long time ago. He used to be a barber. He cut my hair. And he's putting together care packages for family and friends in Venezuela. And people in Venezuela need lots of basics. Food and medicine and I mean, right down to toilet paper.
The stuff is so expensive. A person there has, I think it's between 15 and 20,000 bolivares, a minimum salary for a month. And a kilo of sugar, it costs 2,000 bolivares. Imagine, how can you, when you have a family of three kids, how can you live? I don't have enough money, you know, I'm retired now. I only have a little, but I share a little what I have, you know. But before December, I'm going to send these boxes here.
So Venezuela's in a profound crisis, economic, political, humanitarian. I mean, the contrast between now and what Venezuela was 40 years ago, not that I was there 40 years ago, but there's intense nostalgia, and people talk a lot about how it used to be. You can say that Venezuela is blessed and cursed with this tremendous oil reserve. They've got the largest proven oil reserves of any country in the world. I mean, in the 70s, the Concorde, remember the Concorde, flew weekly from Paris to Caracas. I mean, you can still sort of feel the oil wealth sort of coursing through the city, but it's been really, really mismanaged. Oil prices dropped in 2014, and the bottom just fell out of the economy. And the result is massive food shortages. Production has just plummeted in every area. And things that Venezuela used to be self-sufficient in, like rice, like beef, long list of goods, it no longer is. It now needs to import, and it doesn't have the money to import.
So each box that is 65 pounds costs $160 to send, yeah. So I had to go from here. We go into the UPS. We have a tag, and we put it. My mother is the one that packs everything and everything. Yeah.
Can we see what you're sending?
Mama. Bill,
sí.
Let me go to the bedroom,
yeah,
and bring the box so she
can. Okay.
Les aumentan el sueldo, pero entonces la comida no se consigue y está todo carísimo.
The one box ready. You know?
The suitcase here is full of everything. You can, I mean, Band-Aids and Q-tips and cotton balls and
cotton, Hershey chocolate, Q-tips, deodorants. They don't have deodorants. They don't have anything.
¿Qué son estas?
Esos son alberja.
Green peas.
Green peas. Uh-huh. This is a big bag of pre-cooked white cornmeal, which is used to make arepas.
Arepas is like a piece of bread, like a bagel, like a bread, and it's filled up inside with cheese or anything that you wanted to put inside. So that was the food, that's the Venezuelan food. And people, this one you cannot find there. It's amazing. But this will feed a family, at least they will have some. It's not much, but it will.
It's a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well. That goes tomorrow, that one. Because, you know, every month I send one or two.
Mm-hmm.
So,
fabric, all the basics. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. They deliver it to the door of the house of my sister.
Hugo Chavez was really charismatic by anybody's standards. He was a kind of telegenic populist and a great electioneer and ran for president in 98 and was easily elected. Venezuela had been enjoying a democracy for about 40 years at that point, and yet was experiencing increasing economic dysfunction, rising crime rates, had terrible corruption. So Chavez took over. He was a self-proclaimed socialist, and for some time he really delivered. He sold oil at a great discount to his neighbors, especially Cuba, and oil prices went up while he was in office. So he really had a lot of money to spread around, and he poured money out of the state oil company into health and education, housing. But he really raided the piggy bank, kind of drained the state oil company's coffers, and the government's coffers for that matter, and sort of saved nothing for a rainy day. His vice president, Nicolas Maduro, barely sort of squeaked in a quickly held election after Chavez's death in 2013 and has become steadily less popular since. One of the craziest things, one of the worst things about the situation, the emergency in Venezuela, is that the government refuses international aid. You know, Brazil,
amazing.
The United States, United Nations, all
no,
these
for them,
big
everything
charities.
Is good. For them, is everything is good. They don't see it. It's like they're covering the sun with a finger.
Yeah. And when Maduro came in, I mean, he ran as the son of Chavez, you know, hijo de Chavez. He's got a kind of a mystical streak, and he'll say that he gets instructions from Chavez. You know, the little birds sing to him, and it's Chavez in the afterlife telling Maduro what to do. Maduro's not a charismatic character, let us say. An even worse economic manager than Chavez, which is really saying something. I mean, if this referendum was held, he has no chance of winning. So they've pretty much decided not to hold it, you know, just kind of deny Venezuelans the right to choose their leaders.
And he doesn't want to listen to what is happening. Do the people want him out of there? He's not going to leave. He says, you kill me first, then I leave.
Yeah, you're talking about Nicolas Maduro.
Maduro, yes, yeah. Nicolas Maduro.
Who denies that there's an emergency, who says we have the best healthcare system in the world except maybe Cuba. This is while, you know, people are just dying in the hospital for lack of basic medicines, basic treatment. And some people say it's a matter of pride, Chavista pride. We will not admit that our revolution has failed to this extent, that we won't accept this aid from the capitalists who want to make us look bad.
My sister couldn't find her medication, and she died. She died like 10 weeks ago. They didn't have the medication. She was 84 years old, but, you know, she needed the medication. Yeah. Many people dying.
The public hospitals, the government has even said that out of every three people who go into the public hospital, one dies in the hospital.
Yeah. The brother of my sister-in-law, he burned himself up. And there were no medication, and he got infected. And he died. He died last Saturday.
Oh.
There's no medication, you know.
No antibiotics, no anti-inflammatories,
nothing.
No sterile
guards,
no painkillers.
Nothing. The most things that you need, they don't have it.
You know, it's actually really difficult to visit a public hospital now in Venezuela. Most of them, la Guardia Nacional, Enfrente, y la Policía, y otros militares, they stop you from going in.
With machine guns, yeah.
Yeah, nobody's trying to invade a public hospital. Families are camped on the grounds, they're sleeping on the grounds of the hospital, trying to, you know, feed and help their loved ones and family members who are inside. What I learned from them was that those guys guarding the place are also bachaqueros. Yeah. They're selling black market profiteers. They're selling medicines. They're selling medical supplies.
Yeah, but a lot of people that they have a lot of money is corrupted people. It's worse than being narco-traffickers and everything.
Venezuelans understandably complain about dictatorship and call Maduro a dictator and say it's a dictatorial regime. And quite understandably, I mean, their rights are being increasingly taken away. But at the same time, Venezuela has a terrible crime problem, some of the worst violent crime rates in the world. The murder, robbery, rape, kidnapping is one of the most insecure places I've ever been. Second day I was there, I was sitting in a plaza in a little town near Caracas, and a gunfight broke out, and, you know, people ran screaming. I mean, it's not something people sit around calmly with, but it was obviously pretty common. And one guy was killed, one guy was injured, and a real dictator, Fidel Castro or something, I mean, would not tolerate one-tenth this level of disorder and public insecurity. The government really doesn't have control of the streets, and organized crime does. So it's not a classic dictatorship. There just aren't any elections forthcoming.
Thanks for showing us all this stuff.
Es un trabajo muy, muy bueno.
Lo contenta que se ponen esa gente cuando uno les lleva una cosita.
I'm so happy when they will give these things to them. It's like the joy, the happiness. When a box arrives there, waiting for the box, they call them, we're going to deliver the box tomorrow. It's like all the family has to be reunited in front of the box, to open the box. It's like Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
Have you ever been there when one of your boxes arrived?
No, but I know how people react to those things.
Yeah.
I have everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I have everything. What do I need?
Yeah. You're comfortable here.
Yeah, I'm healthy, you know.
The New Yorker's William Finnegan with Francisco Nava. And I just wanted to mention that Bill and Francisco spoke quite recently, but the inflation in Venezuela is so horrible that some of the numbers Francisco mentioned are already a little off as of today. And they're worse.